cannot disappear.
Maybe hit him high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad, but
accidents happen. They do.
He's done his knee, as Johnny said. Well, this is incredible.
Now will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Welcome back to the Magic Sponge Podcast, a miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. I'm Brian, I'm the guy behind all the stuff you see NRL physio-wise on social media. James, my co-host, you've had a bit of a rough week sickness-wise at your house, but, mate, you still fronted up. This is your, you know, Michael Jordan flu game. You're here on a Sunday night, mate. It's good to have you, and especially when the Finns are top of the table, mate. I'll have you on for a chat anytime when the Finns are killing it.
Well, it's good to chat, Brian, and it didn't take you long to mention the Finns there, so kudos to you for taking all 10 seconds just to rub it in everyone's faces. But I guess when winners win, you got to stake a claim there. So it'll be good this Friday night because it's the Brisbane Derby. Is there a name for it? Are we calling the Brisbane
Battle
Derby?
Battle of Brisbane.
I feel like we can do the battle, like the Brisbane Brouhaha, maybe has a better ring to it for me. I don't know. The Battle of Brisbane just is a bit. It needs a bit of a jazz up, I reckon. I think it needs to get a bit of a facelift for mine just to make it a bit more exciting. But it should be good this Friday night for sure.
Yeah, mate, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it a little bit less after the last 5 or 10 minutes of the game the other night, but we'll talk about those issues very shortly. Mate, we'll get stuck straight into it. I think we've got a lot of stuff to cover tonight, another big weekend. As always, guys, look, we're on YouTube now. Jump on over there, subscribe, review, give us a thumbs up. Really, really helps once we're jumping on YouTube and kind of getting the hang of things over there. This is where you get all your stuff about injuries in the NRL. This is the show. We loop everything back to on-field performance, re-injury risk, Supercoach fantasy. This is where you can cover it all and get that edge on your league mates who might not pay too much attention to that information, and not only league mates, but trying to win the big one if you're right up there at the top pointy end, not like us down the bottom. Look, if you get value out of this content, head on over to Patreon. We've got the Patreon chat over there, which was going off on a few topics over the weekend, which was really cool. You get my, you know, quick takes on injuries. We've got the most detailed casualty ward on the internet, and that's probably the big one, is I sit down and write thousands and thousands of words every Tuesday night about every injured player in the NRL and make sure everything's covered. So if you have any questions, it's mostly answered by the casualty ward. We get detailed write-ups on big injuries if anything happens that I can't cover in the casualty ward. Multiple question and answers during the week, which goes off as well. So head on over to there. But otherwise, let's get into the injuries for round five.
I don't know exactly what he's done. I would have thought it was an ankle, but I'm just guessing.
He shouldn't be out for a long period of time. I'm no doctor. We have to wait for the scans, obviously, but that'd be more positive than negative.
Round five, Brian, we have plenty to sink our teeth into tonight, so we've got a lot to get through. To start off with, as we usually do now, we're going to talk about the HIAs out of this weekend's fixtures. So the players that demonstrated Cat 1 signs and were ruled out with concussion, James Tedesco, Black Taff, Ruben Garrick, Liam Henry, and Samuela Finu. The players that were ruled out with Cat 2 signs were Sam Walker and John Bateman. So all those players are going to enter the protocols as it stands now, with a few of those ones probably fairly fantasy relevant, I guess, the Tedesco, Ruben Garrick, to a lesser extent, probably Sam Walker and Bateman, but for draft people, that's going to be a big consideration.
Before we move on to Storm and Bronx, I probably just want to go back and forth with you on Teddy, particularly because I guess we've got 10 concussions now. I would say the highest number in the NRL. I obviously don't know every NRL player, but 10 is the highest number that I'm aware of. I think there's an interesting discussion point for a lot of people. Look, I probably, by putting information out there like James Tedesco has had 10 concussions, I probably feed the hysteria indirectly or inadvertently a little bit by putting that out there, and then people are like, you know, 10 concussions, he's got to retire immediately. He's got to give it away, or, you know, those kind of comments. I don't think that serves anyone any good to sort of say that, because each concussion situation is different. Obviously, really good news that Teddy has recovered well in the short term. It seems like he's symptom-free. The next day, he's fronted up without any symptoms, which is great. But yeah, I just probably wanted your take, because I know from my perspective, I've said the last two seasons that Teddy is someone who, yeah, look, he might be pulling up really, really well from these concussions, these recent concussions. I mean, he's had two last year. He's now had one this year. He's had 10 over his career. He is pulling up well, and he's returning usually within 2 weeks. And I guess the signs so far from the Roosters probably suggest that he is going to return in potentially 2 or 3 weeks if he stays symptom-free again, because they haven't really commented on, they haven't spoken like a Luke Keary when he had his troubles where they're like, oh, we're just shutting him down for 6 weeks. That's what we're doing. There's been none of that chat. So I guess you being, you know, really like our super coach guy and with having that, like that physio knowledge as well. I know where I sit, which I'll go through in a second, but where do you sit on, like, could you ever safely jump on Tedesco again? Like, are you sort of happy if he comes back and he's going well, sort of be like, yep, I'm happy to get on? Or I guess my concern is that his threshold, like he was never going to get out of that tackle the way he tackled him without a concussion, but I feel like the threshold, that whole, you know, the old boxer glass jaw kind of situation, like, does that concern you at all?
Yeah, I think it does to a certain degree. In saying that, though, it hasn't really affected his performance outcomes and his time missed comparatively to other players. So I guess it's sort of a double-sided coin. When you look at his position that he plays from a Supercoach perspective, I think there's just so many other options. And I think we got Tedesco through his apex, and I think we're probably on the other side of the apex. I don't think he's on a downhill slide by any stretch, but I don't think you're going to have him as the primo, you know, fullback one or fullback two like he used to be in years gone by. I think you've got a lot of other better options there now. In most draft formats, he was about 8th or 9th fullback off the board, I believe. So it really depends on your flavor, but I don't think you're going to see too many people sort of taking him too much higher than that. In standard setups, unless the Roosters were genuinely flying, it was later in the year, they had a soft draw coming up with teams that had been decimated by injury, then I'd have a look. But outside of that, I can't really make an argument for him being someone in my team for those reasons that you mentioned as well, Brian. What about yourself?
Yeah, like I'm kind of the same. Yeah, the same opinion. I've been pretty off him the last couple of years, but this just adds to it more and more. I think, like, the Roosters obviously coming out and it looking like he's going to come back really quickly. It shows you there are some guys who have one concussion and need to retire. Here we've got a guy who's got 10 concussions and he's pulling up, you know, in inverted commas, well or symptom-free after the concussion, which was visually a pretty heavy, you know, concussion. He had those, you know, the stiffening the arms. It was quite, yeah, graphic to see. But once again, he's pulling up symptom-free. The Roosters aren't talking about extended time. So it shows you how every concussion can be different. But I just think 10 confirmed now, who knows how many that we don't know about as well, that load on the brain over his career. My main concern, like, obviously we have concerns for Tedesco as a player and as a human being, you know, and that goes without saying. But if we flow it back to the fantasy and Supercoach side of things, I just don't know how I could trust him to get through 10 weeks, 6 weeks, you know, like over and over and over again with all of this history on his brain at the end of the day. It is... From the outside looking in, it is quite concerning. With other good options, I think if he was like a 5'8 or something like that, where you didn't have the other options, maybe. But yeah, I think this is kind of the final straw for me with Teddy. I think it would take a lot for me to ever consider him from a classic perspective down the track.
Yeah, I don't think there's any other points to hit on there, Brian. I think that's a pretty good summary of it. The only other thing is just the nature of his game as well. I guess he's similar to a lot of those players Supercoach-wise that have a lot of points from runs, a lot of points from tackle breaks, a lot of high work rate guys, and they do come through an apex, like you see with guys in the past, like your Tamalolos, your Josh Mansours sort of spring to mind there. Guys like that eventually get to the point where there's just an accumulation and they're just not at the same apex as they were in their, you know, younger career. I think Brian Toto is probably demonstrating a little bit of that at the moment, probably not to the same degree with a drop-off, but compared to where he was, say, a couple of years ago, there is a little bit of difference there. I would expect the same thing from a guy like, you know, like a Dylan Edwards as well. Chance is another one who's got sort of a few miles on now. You know, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck is another one who has, you know, a lot of meters per games, who has a different sort of game set now. So I think you just got to find where these, hopefully you find out where these guys' apexes are, and you can get on them early and cash in there. And then obviously when it gets to now, you probably need to be a bit more judicious about how and when you get these guys in. So nothing else to sort of touch on there from the other players, I don't think, Brian. So we'll move on to the Storm versus Broncos. So out of this game, couple for the Bronx, Adam Reynolds with a hamstring injury, and then Dean Mariner has been confirmed as a transverse process fracture. Do you want to speak to Dean Mariner probably first off, Brian, there? I think he's an interesting one because a lot of people hear back fracture or spine fracture and think that could be, you know, very, very serious. But in his case with a transverse process, may not necessarily be the case, hey?
Yeah, this is, I think, a really interesting case for people who kind of, you know, don't have experience in these kind of injuries. Because when you hear spinal fracture in anyone, let alone a footy player, you're probably thinking really significant injury, sometimes wheelchair. You know, it can be really, really nasty. But here we have something that, in the grand scheme of things, is considered, I guess, what they call functionally stable. So the transverse process, if you look at your spine from the back, it's got each vertebrae has got two little wings, is the best way to describe it, that sit out to the side. They're two little pieces of bone that just sit out to the side of the vertebrae, and that's where the fracture is. It's not near the spinal cord. It's not near, you know, really any nerves. Like the chance of a spinal cord or nerve injury with this kind of fracture is little to none. So at the end of the day, the best way to say it is it's treated like a fractured rib. And fractured ribs, yeah, they're super, super painful. And I think that is the key to this, is while it's not a worrisome injury on the end of function, on the end of long-term permanent damage, this is one of the most painful injuries a footy player can suffer. And I mean, in this case, Dean Mariner ended up in hospital because they thought he had a kidney injury. They thought that there was some sort of kidney issue going on. And a lot of the patients who I've seen in the past have it, literally, and I mean a lot of them probably haven't been shot in the back, but they describe it as like, yeah, it was like I was getting shot in the back over and over again. So you usually have that like knee to the back, and how it occurred or how it looked to occur from Mariner was Xavier Coates went up for that try, that big leaping try, and then he went up so high and came down directly on Mariner's back, and that looks like where it was done, and usually it's direct contact to the back. But yeah, I think that's the key, is you hear spinal fracture and you can get pretty concerned. And I had plenty of people say, you know, how's he fractured his spine? He's going to be back, the Broncos said, potentially in 3 to 4 weeks. Mitch Moses is probably the most high profile case of this kind of fracture. He suffered one in the 10th minute of one of the Origin games. I think it was 2021. Yeah, in the decider. And he played the whole game, which is just one of the craziest, like, and I mean this sincerely, especially as a Queenslander as well. Like, there's no, like, that is a crazy effort to play through 70 minutes in an Origin, you know, at halfback, big guys running at you with a transverse process fracture, because that pain's insane. But yeah, he came back in 3.5 weeks. So that recovery, the return to play range is usually 3 to 5 weeks, but just pain management kind of thing. But yeah, I think that's a, you know, we speak so much about Supercoach and come back to that, but I just think that's a really interesting thing for people to understand, is that not all spinal fractures mean significant, you know, functionally big problems down the track. So that's an interesting one with Mariner. Mate, Reynolds, this is, yeah, probably the biggest talking point of the early part of the week. There was a lot going on. It seems like it's like an age ago now with all the injuries that happened. But so he suffered a minor hamstring injury. We got a few big questions about this, both in my DMs and in the question post I put out, my DMs on Patreon and the question post that I put out. So I'll talk through a few things with Reynolds. So like re-injury risk, is it elevated when he comes back? Absolutely. He's obviously dealing with this ongoing knee issue, and then he's got the hamstring injury. We know hamstring re-injury risk 10 to 12%, pretty high. Did he return too quickly from the knee injury? I don't think so. I mean, if we believe what they tell us, which is it's a minor MCL sprain, that's not too quickly to return in 2 weeks, which is what he did back to not only to round two, but then to round four as well, like that two-week return to play, pretty standard. If he waited a week or two longer, could he have avoided the hamstring injury? You know, did the knee injury contribute to the hamstring strain? I think absolutely. I don't think you could point to it and say that, you know, having a hamstring injury directly on the leg where he's been dealing with that knee issue, it hasn't contributed. But he was performing well. I know as a Bronx fan, you would have watched that and seen it. But yeah, I think overall, this, and look, James, you're usually the tinfoil hat guy on this podcast, and
I'm here for the tinfoil at all times, Brian, look, as we know.
This is going to be a bit of a tough one to, I guess, you know, say to you being a Bronx guy, but I've got my tinfoil hat on massively with this whole situation because it just, there's so many things that don't add up. And I think we were talking off air, and the Broncos have just turned into a bit of, like, they've just shut down the walls in terms of a lot of injury information. I mean, they come out and they give us so much detail on Dean Mariner, but then on Reynolds, it's just been really cagey. Like, they didn't even give an expected return date for him for a minor hamstring strain. Like, why would you give a 3 to 4 week return to play for Dean Mariner, who's got a transverse process fracture? I know Reynolds is a bit higher profile, but it just doesn't make sense. I went back. I had bad feelings about this injury from round two. I like to sit down and watch the post-match press conferences with a lot of guys, or a lot of teams. And I watched the one at round two when the Bronx were on. And Reynolds just got asked really, really straightforward questions about his knee. And it was when he'd successfully returned from the knee injury, like there were conceivably no issues. He was apparently dealing with a minor medial or MCL sprain. And he was just flat batting. He was like, no, I can't give away those state secrets. You know, someone said, well, is it a medial? And he said something along those lines. It was just all over the shop, which didn't make much sense to me because I'm like, if you're dealing with a minor MCL sprain, I know personal preference of, you know, keeping injury info quiet, but Reynolds has never been like that in his career. He's had a transverse process fracture before that he's spoken about openly, his hamstring issues, you know, every injury under the sun, and he's always been quite open about it. So I just, that didn't make a lot of sense to me. Then you, with your eagle eye, and I'll give you full credit for this, the Broncos doc testing his knee, doing the manual test when he aggravated the knee, and just mouthing, and you messaged me straight away, you're like, he just mouthed, it feels loose, when, you know, he'd been done doing the ACL and stress testing, ligament stress testing, all that kind of stuff, which that concerned both of us, I know, straight away. And then this one, yes, like there's a hamstring injury, no doubt about it, but shedding tears in the sheds with a hamstring injury that is conceivably minor. Post-match, he said, it just tightened up on me and then I felt it go a little bit. And it's come back that it's minor. And he's had hamstring issues in the past, so you would assume he knows what a minor hamstring strain feels like. I just feel like my gut says to me that there is more going on with the knee injury than we know about, or we are being informed on. Yeah. Because there's just like that, you've got the hamstring issue here, which has happened, and you could argue till you're black and blue, no, it would have happened anyway. But there's just a lot of things around this that don't make a lot of sense to me. And when there's smoke, there's fire a lot of the time. I just wonder whether there's an underlying, you know, meniscus issue there that he's playing through. If I really put my tinfoil hat on, is he playing through like an ACL sprain where his knee's a bit unstable, you know, like especially with the Broncos?
What about one, Brian, just on that sort of same wavelength, I just want to throw in there, would he potentially maybe have a PCL deficient knee? And he's got an MCL on top of that, maybe, because that would explain like the feeling of loose, but then the ACL is good. Yep. And then he's sort of trying to manage this ongoing knee, MCL, maybe PCL deficient, which is leading to high hamstring re-injury risk, like, you know, Cleary, for example, that sort of lines up pretty well with him. I can't recall a PCL rupture being reported for Reynolds there historically. But, you know, maybe, just maybe there's, you know, a moderate to, you know, significant PCL injury there underlying that we've just never known light of day on, and maybe that's why it's all a bit cagey, and maybe people heard, oh, he's got a PCL deficient knee and he's coming back in this length of time from an MCL. Maybe they don't want to alert, I don't know who, to that. That's sort of, again, tinfoil-y, like mm-hmm. Area 51 sort of type stuff. But, I don't know. I can't really think of any other like potential hypotheses, because you do make a good point about the Broncos being fairly hush-hush about this stuff. Even Payne Haas still don't have a clue what the hell's going on with that exploratory arthroscopic knee surgery that he had in the time frame they put on him. That's all been very, very, very quiet. So there's been, like you said, there's been a little bit of inconsistency with the detail that they're giving out with a couple of these players at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, 100%. I think Haas is a perfect example. So, like, I have a great affinity to the Bronx. By no means is there any criticism, because at the end of the day, like, I'm all for teams holding back, like, injury info and medical info like this, especially if it's for a competitive advantage side of things. If they don't want people to know that something's going on with Reynolds because they want to, you know, they don't want people attacking his knee or, you know, things like that, then all for it. Competitive advantage, sure. But, yeah, it just feels off. It feels off, as I said, tinfoil hat firmly on. But, yeah, I just I expect Reynolds back in 2 to 3 weeks, to miss 2 to 3 weeks, because I think with the knee and then the hamstring on top, it's probably going to extend that a week or two extra than you usually would from any other player suffering a minor hamstring strain. I mean, we saw Lindsay Collins come back in 2 weeks from a minor hamstring strain, so it is doable. But, yeah, I'd say for Reynolds, he'll probably miss that 2 to 3 weeks by the sounds of things. But, yeah, just a really strange, really, really strange situation. The other thing that's worth mentioning, I think, from this game, just want to say a lot of questions about Joe Chan from the Storm this week. I'm an owner in Classic as well. He played Queensland Cup on the weekend. So he's obviously recovered from his hand infection. Sounds like a selection issue at this point. So Sean Bloor might have won that job.
Good update there on Joe Chan, Brian. We'll go to the Bulldogs versus Roosters. A lot to talk through for this one. So straight out of the gate, Max King and Kurt Mann had hand and wrist fractures, I think, respectively. Oh, sorry, Max King with more of a wrist. Kurt Mann has been reported as a metacarpal, I believe, from Gus Gould there. Connor Tracy with calf strain. Chris Patolo had a neck sort of burner, I think was what that was diagnosed as. And Harrison Edwards was a similar sort of issue, I believe, with a neck sort of burner slash shoulder injury there. And the last one was Billy Kikau was suspicious for a fibula fracture, but it doesn't sound like that has been confirmed, Brian. There might be more of a lower limb contusion type injury, I think.
Yeah, there hasn't been anything confirmed from the Dogs yet, but it definitely, what I've heard, it sounds like it's just a contusion. So just like a bruise, a cork to the lower leg, which would be obviously a win, because if it's a fibula fracture, 6 to 8 weeks out. Mate, if the Bulldogs didn't exist, I'd have rights to complain as a Finns fan with our injury list at the moment. But the Dogs are just getting pumped, and they got pumped last year. Like, the poor buggers, like, they are just really copping it at the moment. So look, we'll run through this as quickly as we can. Kurt Mann with the hand fracture, he's confirmed he'll have surgery. Usually a 3 to 5 week return to play for those. So that's pretty standard for a metacarpal fracture with surgery. Getting surgery actually accelerates the return, because it stabilizes the fracture, allows you to kind of speed up how early you do different rehab exercises, because that fracture is stabilized. And those hand bones usually have really good blood supply, so they heal quite quickly. Max King with the wrist fracture, I think this is an interesting one, because the release from my good friend Gus Gould, or the tweet I should say, said that Max King, in within two tweets of each other, you know, sort of said, Kurt Mann confirmed surgery, Max King discussing his options with the medical team. So, like, my first response was, oh, they're just discussing, you know, surgery versus non-surgery. But then I've been told and heard a few reports that he's trying to play next week, Max King. And now, at first glance, you probably think, wrist fracture, like, how's that happening? It is possible, depending on the specific location of the fracture and how significant the fracture is. Probably the most high-profile example was Mo Fodawaker. I think it was either his debut or second season. He played through a scaphoid fracture for a good 6 to 8 weeks, and your scaphoid is a little bone in your wrist. It's usually a bone that you really don't want to break and you don't want to play through because it has poor blood supply. But it must have just been that the type of scaphoid fracture, they were managing it well with, you know, I guess, bracing it during the week and then having him play on the weekend. So there's a lot of little bones in around your wrist in the base of your hand there. Potentially he's got a small fracture in one of those that they're going to try and, you know, brace or cast up during the week, then have him play on the weekends. The key here is that even if he's able to play through it, it's just going to be sore as, and it's going to be a risk of swelling, a risk of fracturing further. So yeah, it's something that's rarely done, but it can be done, and it sounds like they're going to try and do it. So, I mean, Max King was one of our darlings of the preseason. He's absolutely killing it for us now. So from a Supercoach perspective, I'd love him to keep going because he is just doing wonders for me in my front row. But yeah, performance-wise, I have a few concerns there of like aggravation risk, further injury risk. So yeah, we'll see what comes out with Max during the week and talk about it over on Patreon more during the week as well. Connor Tracy with a calf strain. Yeah, it sounds like he'll be out for at least a couple of weeks. Chris Patolo, that was apparently a burner, but not much information on that. Harrison Edwards is an interesting one because he was getting symptoms, pain down into his hand and into his thumb. So they were worried about a bulging disc. So the disc can bulge out in your neck, pinch on a nerve that runs down into your hand. So if there's a bulging disc there, look, it can be as bad as requiring surgery and needing 3 months out, but more than likely, hopefully they can manage it conservatively. It was just a, you know, it was just an acute thing that nerve got pinched and it settles down and away he goes and he comes back next week. But yeah, I know that's a wide range, but with those neck kind of injuries, it can be quite wide. Mate, Max King, as I said, with a wrist fracture, from a Supercoach perspective, if you hear he has a fracture but he's playing through it and he's going to play next week, are you doing, you're not like jumping off him. I'm sure you've got bigger fires to put out, but say you're a Supercoacher with a gun side, would you be worried about Max King's scores moving forward if he's trying to play through a wrist fracture?
Probably not as much as if he had a sternal rib fracture. I think it probably doesn't decrease his output too much. I think most of the times you should be able to get around that, I would say, in the front row. It's just a high collision sort of position, isn't it? You know, you're taking plenty of carries, you're making plenty of tackles. It's inevitable you're going to get your hand caught up in those collisions inadvertently. So it does put him at higher risk. Would I move him on at price point? Like, the only other one at the price point that looks reasonably okay is Davide Totola. But again,
the other one, Steph Wotoikamanu was the one I was looking at before I found out he was going to play through it. But I agree.
Is the other one. Yeah, but even, you know, with the Bunnies, like, they look like a dumpster fire at the moment. Like, there's a whole lot going on in that club. So do you really want to move that way? It feels a bit sideways when you can hopefully, if you've got, like, Sam Hughes in your team, you probably just want to hope between them you can just figure out one that you can navigate through most of the weeks there, I think would be the way you do it instead of burning a trade in and out. Look to other positions, I would say, Brian, would be my way of going. Your initial lean there as a Max King owner?
Yeah, same. Yep, I'm exactly the same. I think front row is a low upside position as it is, so ride King, baby, because he's an injury by the year for a reason, mate. He's killing it.
Yeah, Max King season. Knights v Dragons, Brian. Tyson Frizzell was a hamstring injury pre-game here. We haven't really heard much of severity on Tyson Frizzell there, have we?
Well, the initial whispers were that it was minor. Like, they were saying, oh, minor, you know, might only miss a week or two. But then Adam O'Brien in the post-match presser was, like, very negative about it. He was like, he's no chance for next week. And then there was a report he's going to miss multiple weeks. So Yeah, not much we can do with that, unfortunately. Like, there were, you know, some people saying 1 to 2 weeks. Now we've heard multiple weeks, so, yeah, I can't give much insight there. I mean, you have to go with what the coach says most recently, that he's no chance. And he's, so Dylan Lucas, if you're, you know, possibly looking at a Dylan Lucas, he might be a better buy now. He put up a good score on the weekend in the wet, so particularly from a draft point, I'd be jumping all over Dylan Lucas, because potentially if it's a moderate strain, 4 to 6 weeks. You know, you could have Dylan Lucas for 4 to 6 weeks, and who knows what happens in that time as well. Does Frizzell come back and play through the middle or something like that? You just don't know. So, yeah, at the moment, I'd jump on Dylan Lucas if you're a drafter, and if you really want to go that way in Classic, I don't think he's the worst buy with that news.
Probably not if you're chasing points at centre wing, Brian, for Classic. Like, even he's about 488, I think. Oh, I don't know if he has played his third game yet, so it would be interesting his price point as to where he sort of lands. But if he's guaranteed an edge position, I think he's playing right edge and KPP's playing left edge for the Knights there, I think is how it played out the other night. He's probably not such a bad shout. I think the Knights have been okay, like gritty, but not at their full flying best. But tell you what, any team that's got Kalen Ponga, I think the Cogger and Hastings combo will work pretty well for them as well. If they can stick in the halves and just get those combos going, could be a nice little add there in the centre wing. Rabbitohs v Warriors here, Brian. So I didn't catch this game, but I had a five-leg multi on, so I saw a few dollars come my way out of that. So that was good to see. For the Warriors, so Dallin Watini-Zalesniak was ruled out pre-game with a hamstring injury. They're reporting that as fairly minor. I think Webster said pre-game, maybe only a week. Murata Niokoro, this is an unusual one. So he was returning this week from a foot fracture, and then he pre-game re-injured it, or different injury to the foot, not really very specific there. So Webster was pretty coy in the pre-game interview I saw there as well. He said, oh, he's injured himself, you know, just unluckily. Didn't really say it was a re-injury or a new injury or something like that. So again, it's just the great wall of China from the Warriors there. And then on the Bunnies front, so Lachie Ilias was an interesting injury, which is really unfortunate, with a tibial fracture in the New South Wales Cup. And the other one, sorry, we just didn't mention there, was Bunty Afol with a hamstring injury as well, Brian. So who do you want to take away out of those Warriors and Lachie Ilias, I guess, is the other bunny?
Yeah, DWZ and Bunty Afol probably speak for themselves. DWZ sounds like just hamstring awareness, so should be back. And Bunty, you know, if he's got a minor strain, probably 2 to 4 week return to play. Murata Niokoro, that's a really interesting one. I mean, we speak about it time and time again about these foot bones, and I mean, we ranted on about it with Mitch Moses last week. There are some bones in the foot that have really poor blood supply, and is this one where he's come back, poor blood supply bone? We never found out what the injury was for Murata Niokoro in the preseason. Now he's come back, he's injured again. Yeah, we're not getting a lot of detail there, but it sounds like he's going to be out till round 13 or 14. So a good 8 week, you know, stint on the sideline. So it's probably a nasty one. And once again, it'd fit in with something like a fifth metatarsal fracture, which is what Moses has. Lachie Ilias, the tibia fracture, mate, that's one of the most graphic injuries we've seen in recent times. You know, you slow it down, the sicko like I am, but once again, I had a few people say, you know, did you need to post this footage and all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, as horrible as it is for Ilias, the mechanics around how injuries happen really interest me as a physio, and I'm sure it interests you as a physio. It interests a lot of people. Yes, it is gruesome and graphic, and it has that side of it as well. But yes, sort of seeing those things, it's part of our job. It's what makes us tick, which might be a little bit sick in the head. But anyway, that's why we look at these kind of things. We treat them day in, day out. So with Lachie Ilias, he'll look second tibia fracture in 2 weeks, which I couldn't tell you how many times we've seen isolated tibia fractures in the NRL. I could count on one hand, I reckon. And here we've got two in 2 weeks, so pretty crazy. He'll be facing, so he's going to have surgery. He'll have at least 3 months, potentially up to 6 months recovery. So yeah, could be almost season over for him, which would be a huge blow. Pointing to you, actually, I had someone comment, and I'm like, oh man, this is crazy. James will love this. It's a spitting image, although Ilias's injury. Yeah. No. The one for me, yes, it's absolutely a Scott Prince injury, but isn't this situation so similar to the Sam Walker situation from last year, where a team's going crap, they drop the halfback for, it wasn't the halfback's fault that the team was going shit. The halfback has gone
back.
Never
the halfback's fault the team's going shit, but they always get the shot.
That's right.
It's a rugby league rule as old as time.
And he goes back to New South Wales Cup and suffers a significant injury like Sammy Walker did with his ACL. So I'm like, oh, that's a really good observation. I was that's and I knew you would like that, especially
I did think that as well. When I was watching it, I was like, my goodness, Dean Hawkins is not really going that well. I wonder if Ilias is due back. And then I was like, actually, he's not coming back this year. That's a huge, huge blow. And I think, Bunnies fans are so galvanizing Lachie Ilias. Only a season or two ago, they were like, letting Reynolds go wasn't like the worst thing. He was pretty solid. They made some deep runs in the finals. But then all of a sudden, he's the big problem there, where none of their other good players are aiming up. None of their forwards are aiming up. The culture there looks pretty ordinary. They're just dropping pill left, right, and center. The whole thing just looks like an absolute shell mozzle. But Lachie Ilias gets the chop to cup and then gets injured subsequently. I just think those sort of things are just so, so, so unlucky. The Sam Walker situation, I know I ranted about heavily. This is exactly the same. It's just diabolical coaching decisions to send a guy to cup. And it's not their fault he gets injured, but he should never be playing that level of footy anyway. The biggest one, this is a real weird tangent, Brian, but this is exactly how I felt when Phil Hughes got hit in that game for South Australia. He was in the typical, you're batting for your position in the Australian team this summer. He was playing for South Australia, should never have been playing that game because he should have been a lock for that first test of the summer. Anyway, he's in this this game for a position with some other numpty opener that never did anything for Australia. And he ended up in that scenario as well. It's just, there's so many examples of this where people should not be playing this level and bizarre, stupidly unlucky things happen. So you feel for Lachie Ilias, hey, hopefully he can get through that. I don't know what they're sort of thinking. It sounds like tibial nail is probably going to be the most likely course of action there. And that's a big surgery in itself. So all the best for Lachie Ilias there. Was there any other things you wanted to wrap up there for the Bunnies Warriors, Brian?
Yeah. So I just wanted to say, interestingly, they put a nail all the way down. You mentioned the nail. They put like a steel rod all the way down the shin bone and that stays in there. So his tibia is going to be I think Conor McGregor famously broke his tibia and said, his tibia is stronger than ever now because it's made of metal because he's got that in there now. So, but the other thing I wanted to say on this, which I've made a pact to myself and I've kind of gone against it a couple of times this season, but I'm like, Brian, for your own mental health, you need to stay out of, blow-ups about tackle techniques and, sin bins and all that kind of stuff. I just was like, I need to stay out of it because it's just infuriating at times. I almost gave in on this because, and look, whether it's a penalty, sin bin, send-off, all a matter of opinion for me, really. You're going to have people everywhere on the spectrum. Where I nearly lost the plot was the people, and I hate using this terminology, but the people victim-blaming Lachie Ilias for kicking a footy and causing his own injury was absolutely ridiculous. Freddie Lustig is just going for the charge down and Lachie Ilias kicked through the ball and hit and kicked Freddie Lustig. Just that take, I had to put my phone down. I was like, there cannot be human beings out there who are saying, what kick do you not kick through the ball? I just don't. At the end of the day, people saying it's not illegal contact, you just cannot. Freddie Lustig had no intention to do what he did. He was trying to charge down the ball, but he got it wrong because he didn't charge down the ball. It reminded me a little bit of I'm not a big soccer guy, but I think in soccer, if you get the ball, then even if it's a bit of a dangerous tackle, you kind of, it's like, well, I got the ball first, so I nailed it. Whereas he didn't get the ball. He screwed up. He did not. He tried to charge it down. He didn't. He hit the legs. You are not allowed to hit the legs of a kicker. blanket rule, you're not allowed to do it. So it is illegal by the rule book because you just cannot contact the legs of a kicker. You can't do it. So he got it wrong. People saying, how could he have charged it down better? I think he was almost too close. He was too close to Lachie Ilias. He needed to be that little bit either further away from him or further to the side of him because that's where the ball ended up being. That's the answer to that. I don't want to go on about it too much, but yeah, just the victim blaming stuff of like it was Lachie Ilias's fault that he broke, like, and Freddie Lussick did nothing wrong. That was, yeah, that was crazy to me.
Well, this is the internet, Brian, so you get lots of heaps good opinions on it, so don't let it affect your mental health too much there, or go to your GP and get a mental health care plan stat, because otherwise we might be in a bit of trouble on the Magic Sponge. For the Manly versus Panthers game, the only one out of this is Jerome Luai with a knee concern, Brian. I didn't see anything video-wise about this. Do you know much detail here about Jerome Luai?
Yeah, I literally only found out about it this afternoon when I was looking at an article. This is probably the game that I didn't see. I saw the least of. I actually sat down and watched the highlights with my daughter this morning. So that was to see Tommy Turbo lighten it up after we all doubted him last week. But yeah, he suffered. He kind of got landed on funny in the first half, a typical MCL sprain mechanism. So he fallen on, stretched the inner side of his knee. He felt for the inner side of his knee. He battled through until about the 67th minute, and then they brought him off. So they seemed pretty confident. I think Ivan said in the post-match, look, we're already down. There was no point leaving him out there kind of thing. And the bye comes at a really good time. So hopefully it is a minor MCL sprain. If it's a minor MCL sprain, he's back after the bye, no questions asked. It's just more depending on his toughness. Did he play through a moderate sprain? A moderate sprain would be more that like kind of 3 to 5 week range, so he may miss a few weeks. So yeah, it'll just depend on the grading of that MCL because he was strapped up on the bench once he came off in the 67th minute, so for that MCL kind of area. So it'll just depend on the grading, but hopefully minor and hopefully the bye's just fallen at a good time for him.
Fingers crossed for the Panthers then. So in the Finns versus the Tigers, few out of this one, Brian, and one of the all-time great press conferences by Wayne Bennett out of this as well. If you haven't had a chance to see it, it's one of the most icy death stare, I don't give two flying you-know-whats about anyone asking me questions. It's just vintage Wayne. It's very, very, very good for those playing along. So for the Dolphins, Herbie Farnworth and Tom Flegler, AC joint injuries is the suspicion there. And Felice Kaufusi, Latifainu, Ewan Aiken, hamstring injuries. And then Api Korosau has been reported as a quad strain there, Brian. So you can sort of group those two, well, a lot of those guys together. I guess Appy's probably the most fantasy relevant player. A lot of people are going to roster him at 9. Do you think he'll miss time with his quad injury?
I doubt it. I think we're going to talk about Griffin Neem and sort of the difference of a lot of players between playing hurt and playing injured. This quad strain was minor. He suffered it in the warm-up, and he just got through it. Like that, a lot of guys get through these kind of minor quad, minor, you know, groin strains. They're considered day-to-day is how we term them in the physio medical world, in that like they can improve quite significantly day to day. It doesn't mean he's not at risk of aggravation, and he will probably be for the next week or two, provided that he gets through it unscathed. It only usually lasts for a week or two, but yeah, there are some concerns for like aggravation. He might aggravate it in game, and maybe it limits his performance slightly, but I actually thought he looked better in the second half than he did in the first, funnily enough. So yeah.
The goal kicking was the one, wasn't it? Yeah. Sort of explains that.
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah, so nothing too major. If you're an Appy, owner, you just hold. If you don't own Appy, he's probably not someone who I'd jump on just in case he does aggravate it and has to go off or something like that. And there are a few good options emerging at hooker too. But, yeah, I think for the moment you just stand put with Appy. The AC joint sprains, I think I was really, really sad. Sad sack on last night. I said to you off air, I think I'm finally getting back to that like fandom. I probably haven't had fandom like this in a while where like what happens to my team directly influences my mood for like the next however many, well, particularly the hours after the game, but yeah, like for however many days. I think I was obviously really happy that the team went well, but then to see those two guys go down with injuries was not good. I was really glad that my initial thought on Herbie was that it was more the shoulder into the ground rather than the kind of the gripping of the player was the issue. Because there was a lot of talk of Peck, and I just didn't, I was like, oh, Peck would really surprise me, because he was in a lot of pain, which I know Peck tears can be super, super painful, but AC joint issues are known as the, along with, you know, we spoke about rib fractures and stuff, that like AC joint, and especially grade 3 AC joint, where the ligament fully ruptures, that is about as painful as it gets injury-wise, and you could see the pain he was in. So I think people talking down, oh, he's only going to be out for 4 weeks, why was he carrying on? This injury is super, super painful. Effectively, best way to describe it is your collarbone is separating from your shoulder blade. Where your shoulder blade comes up to you, you're literally tearing the ligaments and separating those two bones. So it is pretty full on. His is a high grade. We've seen guys come back in as quick as 2 weeks from those high grade issues, but when they came back, their performance was through the floor, not good. So the average is around that 4 weeks, which is what they've said. They said it can be a little bit longer. We have seen guys pushed out to 6 weeks, but the longer they have off, obviously, the better they come back as well. So yeah, I'm still expecting around that 4 weeks for Herbie. There shouldn't be too many concerns if he comes back around that 4 weeks. If he comes back earlier than that, I'm a bit concerned about him. Tom Flegler is a really good chance for next week because they initially said AC joint sprain, but apparently he's pulled up really, really well this morning and looking pretty good. So if you're a Tom Flegler owner, I would hold. But there, once again, if he's got a minor AC joint sprain, there is a risk of aggravation sort of over the next 3 to 4 weeks. And then Felice Kaufusi, Ewan Aitken. I wanted to mention Ewan Aitken because he grabbed at his hammy. He hasn't really been reported, but he seemed to grab at his hammy and come off with about 10 minutes to go. One to watch out for because he has a big history with hamstring injuries. And I mean, the Finns really need forwards at the moment. And then Latu Fainu, there's your textbook hamstring re-injury, especially, you know, in those first couple of weeks back. I don't think he was first two, but he's in that first, oh, it might be actually the first two, his first 2 weeks
yeah,
back.
Yeah, could be.
So yeah, like your standard, he was dealing with a hamstring injury, missed the first couple of weeks, and then has come back and re-injured. And then I just wanted to mention for any diehard Finns fans like me out there who are hoping that all of these injuries, it's okay, because Connolly Lemuelu will be back soon. He will not be back soon. He was in the shed, still in a knee brace. We tossed backwards and forwards after round one, was it a medial in the sense of an MCL or an MPFL? So was it inside of his knee or inside of his kneecap? With him still being in a brace 4 weeks post, I think it's MPFL. I think he dislocated his kneecap, which gives me a bit more concern about re-injury risk moving forward when he does come back. So that's the gut call on that. But yeah, he won't be back anytime soon because he's still in a brace. So he's got to, even once he's out of the brace, he's still going to have multiple weeks till he returns.
Yeah, Ewan Aitken's the one to watch there, Brian. He's been pretty good for fantasy purposes in, like, you probably roster him in center wing position for draft. You can flick in between. But he's been pretty solid since taking over the edge there. I guess Kenny Bromwich gets one edge if he's out. And then I don't know what they do with the other. I don't know who else is in the top 30 there, Brian. They're sort of getting...
Oren Keeley.
There, aren't they?
Oren Keeley's a
He's an edge, is he?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Okay. He plays edge, so we might see him next week.
Might be one to watch. Yeah, good shout. Cowboys v. Titans, Brian. So pretty typical ACL injury here for Kyle Labert straight out of the gate. So really unfortunate there for Kyle. He'll look like he'll miss the season there. The other injuries out of this one, Kieran Foran with an ankle, Jaden Campbell with an ankle, and Griffin Neame with a medial knee issue as well. Do you want to sort of wrap up Kyle Labert? I guess it sort of looks like a fairly typical ACL, didn't it, Brian, unfortunately?
Yeah, mate, that was about as clear an ACL injury as you will see. I think a few people sort of were commenting on the video when I put it up saying, oh, no, he just banged knees with Kieran Foran, but it was the other knee. That was the left knee. The right knee, if you look at it again, you can see a huge shift of that tibia. I'm still here. The only one I've seen where it looked like there was a shift, but it was more due to contact, was Dane Gagai, I think in Origin a few years ago. It came back as nothing. I've never seen one non-contact shift like that and it not be an ACL injury. It's like, it is the single most diagnostic video example I can give. And when I say diagnostic, I am very specific a lot of the time, being like, I'm not making diagnosis for your injury. I'm just giving you my analysis on what potentially could have happened on the mechanism of injury. We're definitely getting to the stage, and I've actually seen a study on this, funnily enough, in European football, in soccer. Someone actually went through and they've done a full-on published study on how that tibial shift on video is actually diagnostic of ACL injury when in a non-contact situation. Right. So, yeah, so it's about as close as you can get. Kieran Foran with the ankle, it was a lateral ankle sprain. He got hit by one of his players, and it was crap video, which is why I haven't posted it. It was zoomed right out, and they didn't. I haven't seen a replay anyway. There might be a replay, but I didn't see a replay. Just that standard. He tried to return. He was running on the sideline, but just couldn't quite get there. Jaden Campbell with the ankle. It was a high ankle sprain mechanism because of that hip drop, from Chad Townsend, which by the NRL's letter of the law wasn't a hip drop, but yeah, it's still a dangerous tackle, don't get me wrong, but it's also not a hip drop tackle. So it's just, yeah, I mean, we've ranted about this time and time again about how the way they've set it up doesn't really encompass all the dangerous tackles, but also how do you not know, yeah, by now what your own guidelines say is a hip drop tackle and isn't a hip drop tackle. We had Victor Radley as well, you know, no charge there. It's just, yeah, it's getting... And then the other one that wasn't charged, which was a hip drop tackle, was that, and we'll get to it soon, with Hayes Dunster. Like, it's just all over the shop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, ooh. Like, that was, yeah. Anyway, Griffin Neame, the medial knee issue. I just wanted to talk about this because it was really interesting. If you haven't watched Todd Payton's post-match presser, go and watch it, because he talks about Griffin Neame, and I think this is a really interesting concept, and I talk about it sometimes. He talks about Griffin Neame learning to play hurt versus playing injured. So just the difference, and that's a concept in a lot of professional sport particularly, where there's a difference between hurt and injured. Injured, like there's significant damage, there's risk for further damage, you can't get through it. But so many guys go out there week in, week out playing hurt that we never find out about. And we might find out about it sometimes, but guys are carrying grade one, sometimes grade two strains and sprains, and they're strapping it up and they're getting out there. And it was a really interesting comment from Todd Payton. You don't often get that insight from a coach to kind of be like, yeah, look, guys play hurt. That's what they do. And especially as it gets towards the end of the season, it's obviously a lot more prevalent. But yeah, it's he should be fine for next week, I think, Griffin Neame.
Last game of the round, Brian, was the Raiders versus the Eels. So out of this one, Jordan Rapana with a knee issue, Corey Horsburgh, Big Red with the abdominal strain type injuries, what's been reported there. And the last one to touch on here, which is nearly the most unfortunate injury circumstance I can recall, with Hayes Dunster getting hip-dropped again and sustaining a Liz Frank injury. So you might recall Hayes Dunster was hip-dropped and he had the multi-league knee injury. So he had ACL, and I think it was ACL, MCL, wasn't it, Brian, I think, from memory. And he's come back in New South Wales Cup and he's had a similar sort of mechanism tackle, and it's going to result in a fairly complex injury again for Hayes. So that's like brutally unlucky for him, hey?
Oh, mate, I actually thought he'd looked pretty good in the vision that I'd seen of him. Like, I won't lie, I don't keep up with New South Wales Cup as much as many people do, but yeah, I just the vision that I'd seen of him in the trials and then, you know, into this year, I thought he was starting to look good coming back, because he was so... The promise in him before that multi-league knee injury was huge. But yeah, he was just starting to get it back, I think. Liz Franks can be really tough. Performance-wise, they usually limit guys when they come back because it's that push off from the foot. So Liz Frank is a mid-foot injury. So if you can imagine when you're trying to push off, like the pain through that middle of the foot can be really nasty. So yeah, I think just thoughts go out to him. It is just really, really unlucky. He's done nothing. There's nothing there that he's done to get himself injured. Just two really nasty tackles. Jordan Rapana, this is an interesting one. They initially reported that potentially he dislocated his kneecap, but then it came out that it was a meniscus. And I think I just saw a tweet. So he got interviewed in the post-match and said his meniscus locked up and the doc put it back into place. Now, as a physio, James.
Good going.
this is the kind of stuff we fight against all day, every day, where patients come in with the belief that that kind of stuff is possible. But yeah, more than likely, it does actually bring a bit of concern moving forward, because if his knee lock, and that's what it looked like, to be honest. I was watching it as the kids. It was, you know, witching hour here and pretty crazy, but I could kind of see it was locking up on him. And very rarely, it might be a subluxing patella, but the kneecap, the more common one is that it's the meniscus or like a floating bit of cartilage in the knee that's getting stuck. There's definitely concern moving forward. I think, look, he got through the rest of the game, which is great, but even if he is named to play and plays next week, there is big concerns for like re-injury, further injury, the knee locking up down the track if it is a meniscus issue. So yeah, definitely one to watch there with Rapana. If they kind of scan it and they're not real happy with it, that's one where you can go in and get a clean out surgery and require 4 to 6 weeks recovery. So yeah, potentially there's there might be a multi-week issue for him. And then Corey Horsburgh with the abdominal strain, that is one that can be a minor issue and he can play hurt, so he can have, you know, a minor abdominal strain and play through it. We've seen guys, and it can be as bad as a hernia, which is where the muscle strains that much that it separates and your intestines effectively start to bulge out a little bit through that separation, which sounds gross, but that's what a hernia is. We've seen guys even play through that. Michael Morgan is a really famous one. He kind of pushed through, once again, really affects your performance, like trying to play through something like that. You can require, you know, hernia repair surgery, which is 8 weeks recovery. Sports hernia surgery is probably the more common, common terminology that you would hear as a fan. So yeah, it could be anything at this point. So that's a really tough one to come down on. I don't think either of them looked too bad.
Yeah, right. I don't think anything else I'd want to wrap up there for those ones, Bron. We've done well to get through that all. So we might go straight into the Patreon questions. So patreon.com/NRLphysio. We get the questions every week here with Brian. He updates everything through Patreon there. Get around the community and get involved there with Brian, as mentioned earlier. First question from Patreon, Brian: what did you think of Cam Munster's return, and would you be jumping onto him as a pod for super coach purposes, even with potential for injury lingering there maybe?
I thought he looked about as good as you could have hoped for. I mean, it was a bit of a to and fro game with the Bronx. So it was a lot of attack, not much defense. Munster didn't get too involved. Like, we didn't see that standard, you know, Munster bumping, running, you know, breaking tackles, spinning around in circles, those kind of moves. We didn't see that version of Munster, but with what's been reported he's been dealing with, that doesn't surprise me in the slightest. Would I be jumping on him as a pod? Hell no. That's my opinion. I mean, from the Supercoach side of things, how are you feeling about him? I just think with what's been reported on him, I just couldn't do it.
Not yet. I think you want to see a little bit more, don't you, before you jump on. In saying that, I'm rostering Dylan Brown at the moment. That's not going too great for me, so I'd be more than inclined to jump off there, because Dylan Brown looks like one of the worst investments I could have ever made. But yeah, I think you still want to see a little bit more there at the sixth spot. It's a bit of a dicey position anyway, and you're paying pretty close to top dollar there at the moment for Munster. I think you probably want to see if he bottoms out a little bit in price and then have a look at that point. Question number two, Brian, is about Clint Gutherson. So I think one of the patrons mentioned that there's been padding he's been wearing around his ribs. Is that indicative of anything or just a preventative thing, do you reckon?
No, it's definitely indicative that he's dealing with a rib issue, and you could see he was kind of quite uncomfortable with it. So yeah, like, probably not a big thing for a fullback. More if I knew a middle forward was dealing with a rib issue, I'd be a lot more concerned. But for a fullback, you're not going into contact all that often. Like, maybe, I don't know, I haven't checked his runs or his stats. Apparently he's been wearing it for a couple of weeks now. It'd be interesting to have a look at his runs and see if his run numbers have gone down over the last couple of weeks. But yeah, for a fullback, it's not a massive concern. It's just more, you know, if he gets crunched in a tackle like he did, either A, does that limit him for the rest of the game in his production? Is he able to go into contact as hard? Or B, does he have to go off? Is it that bad that he needs to go off and, you know, get a needle or stay off. Yeah, it's just it's a minor consideration. He's not someone who I'd be jumping, you know, to buy, because fullback is just so stacked, even with the goal kicking. But with this rib thing, it probably, yeah, just adds that little bit extra of like, yeah, he's not really a buy at this stage for me.
No, I don't think so either. The fullback spot, you've got a lot of other better options there I think you can pour money into. Question number three, Brian, is about the most concussions that have been documented in a week. We had 8 this week as of round 5, 2024. What has there been any weeks worse than this from a concussion standpoint?
Yeah, mate, I think people need to go back to 2021, mate. Like 2021, when they introduced all of those new rules with like no warning whatsoever, and then they also had that high tackle crackdown, which, you know, the new rules, high tackle crackdown. So players are trying to like change their tackle technique, but also deal with like all these new rules. 2021 was mental. So we had 8 concussions this week. We had, I think, mid-teens. It was about 15 HIAs. I haven't done that number yet, but I think it was about 14 or 15 HIAs. Mate, there are several weekends in 2021 where there was 8 or more failed HIAs. The record was round 2021. We had 10 failed HIAs. And round 12 in 2021, we had 23 performed HIAs. So in other words, there wasn't 10 failed, but there was 23 total for the weekend. So 23 players coming off to have a HIA. So yeah, just 2021 was cooked. Like, so I think I've got it here in the show notes. So it was 345 HIAs performed and 124 failed. But the average in other years was 275 performed and 85 failed. Now, if that doesn't sound like much to you, like a big difference, almost every other year is like plus or minus like 5% of the 275 performed and 85 failed. Like, I've never seen a year over 100 or under like 75 for failed, and we had 124 failed in 2021. It's still the number one story for me that I just was shocked that no journo reporter was banging down the door of the NRL being like, what are you doing about this? Because I think the NRL kind of said, oh, it's only high because we've obviously got improved testing and we're picking up on more. But every year since then has been back down to that 85, 90. So I don't know whether that washes. I think it was, yeah. It's still the biggest story for me from an injury perspective that I don't think was covered, in near enough depth.
What are the tinfoil speculations there, Brian? What do you reckon? What are we dealing with? What are the conspiracies that have been covered up?
Mate, I just think it was poor. I think it was poor to add so many rule changes on guys with little to no warning. And then coming off COVID, where like training was all over the shop, because COVID is 2020. So we had the COVID year where it was all over the shop, then adding in new rules, this high tackle crackdown, which just is fine to do. I'm the number one proponent for player safety, but they just threw it in like mid-season. They're like, oh, by the way, we're sending everyone off. They
threw it in Magic Round?
Yeah.
It just was like absolute circus. Because everyone is loaded on grog and it's like, send him off.
And they were doing like, it. They were sending everyone.
Yeah, they were. And it was so bizarre. It was like, well, I remember the Broncos game versus Manly when the Broncos got lapped. But they played with 11 for pretty much the whole game, just in sin bins. It was like the most bizarre, most farcical sort of weekend of footy, and like one of the like better weekends that should be, I guess, the product. It was just rugby league just typically just shot itself right in the foot, in both feet on that weekend. It was really funny.
Well, it was a change that was supposed to be for player safety, and yet meanwhile the season was the highest number of concussions ever. So I'm like, well, it obviously didn't succeed because we had more concussions than ever. So I don't, yeah, it's a weird one.
Very last one, Brian. What are the plans for Magic Round this year?
Oh,
or the Magic Sponge?
This is a good question. And we just spoke about Magic Round. So we're definitely going again as we do every year. I think, unfortunately, when we only did one night last year, I reckon that's the same. We've just got too many boys who just have young kids. And we're just all in that stage in our lives where it's hard to get a two-night pass from the ladies in our life, although they do have mum's magic round to even things out later in the year, so they all get to go away for a weekend. But we'll definitely do the Saturday night. I might try and pop along on the Friday night. I like to just get along and go to the games because I just love the atmosphere and might have a few beers and stuff like that. So if anybody listening has a spare ticket for the Friday night and wants to tag along from me, then hit me up. Yeah, we'll be there Saturday night. Yeah, we'll try and... I think last year we spoke about getting like a massive novelty sponge made and putting the Magic Sponge logo on it. Yeah, I think we should try and do that this year. Or just get a whole bunch of sponges with the Magic Sponge logo and just hand them out. That's our version of merch. Is just giving everyone, you know, a nice sponge to.
We'll bring a prop up tent and then just do signatures on arrival for everyone if they want to have a signed sponge. That'd be a good cheer. That'd be really funny. Yeah. That'd be about it, I reckon, Brian.
I love it, mate. All right, let's go over to Supercoach, mate. Yeah, bit of a carnage week again. What hit me with, mate, I hate to say it, I've got you again on the good bloke stakes, but we need to do something, mate, because I don't think either of us are... I think we're both going to be in the tens of thousands of rankings, which is...
Yeah.
It's unknown for the both of us. Usually we're up the pointy end, but I don't think we're there this year.
Yeah, you've gone big on me again this week, Brian. So as it stands now, I'm just shy of 1,000. I'm 989. So what I did last week was traded SJ in, traded Bradman Best in, because I just had I was tossing up between him and Lomax. So, of course, I did the wrong thing and traded Best in. Part of my thinking is he gives me around 13 player, and I think he's pretty matchup proof. I just hope I can catch fire with him. I think he's sort of bottom out in price. That's my thinking with him. Didn't really work out for me this week.
Knights have got a real good draw coming up too. So I don't think
So I'm really crossing everything that sort of blows up for me. And then Talangi was the other one I traded in. So I looped Callum Ponga, but in the process, I ended up non-playing Ethan Strange, which was a real kick in the dick because I locked out on like an extra 80 points there. So that really sucks this week. So I've got two plans and I don't know which way I'm going to go. So Dom Young and another center out, and I can nearly get Joey Manu, Lomax, Kiraz, Timoko, or RTS, two of them. I don't really know what I'm going to do on that front. I think Manu is probably the most obvious. I think Lomax is probably the second most obvious. So it might just come down to dollars and cents. I'll do it via Brendan Piakura if I need to via center wing there. So I just need to get more points out of center wing. I've just been shocking there all year. I just need to put money into it. I've got about... I've just shot 300 in the bank, so I should be able to get there with a couple of trade-ins, hopefully, pending that Dom Young doesn't drop heaps of money and Joey Manu doesn't gain too much and he's out of reach there. The other thing is the Dylan Brown problem that I mentioned earlier. The option is, do you go Dylan Brown down to someone like a Matty Burton who's just hit 140-something to try and chase some points and some dollars? But it just feels really sideways, and Matty Burton's draw is not that good. He's got a couple upcoming, then a bye. Whereas I think Dylan Brown has around 9 by with a few better matchups there, but it doesn't feel good either way. It just feels a bit yuck. It feels like you're in Alabama and you're kissing your cousin. It's just not really a good thing. You don't feel good about it either way, do you? It's a bit ugly. The Max King problem was the other one in scenario number 2, but I think I'm going to kick that can down the road till next week or the week after and just roll Sam Hughes in the front row. Hopefully he just sees some minutes while Max King misses any time. If he does miss any time, if he plays, he's just a starter in my team. He's just this one less trader I need to make. So that's probably where I stand at the moment, Brian. I think my lean is to stack the backs as it stands at the moment. The Dylan Brown one, I think I'm just going to have to just take my licks and just keep starting him at 6 because even going down at the moment, I'm going to lose probably close to 130 on that trade. And then, you know, you're subbing someone in there that you probably don't feel that much better about anyway. It just feels a bit sideways, doesn't it, I think, from that point of view. So very dire start for the season for me. None of my picks are going very well at all. So I'm not going too good. I think it's just going to be probably a Mount Everest for me to climb back here, Brian. It's not looking very good for yours truly on this season. Probably my worst season ever, I reckon, from a starting point of view. It just hasn't fallen my way with a few trades. Even this week, I traded, I think, Smithy's out and he played 80 and I was like, Man, I really need that number now. I could have traded him or Piakura, chose the wrong one. It's just been that sort of season, unfortunately. Just having nailed centre wing is really what I've missed out massively. How'd you go on a bit more of an upside there?
Well, just quickly, could you go, because obviously I think I spoke about it last week, I had to get rid of one of my 5'8s and I moved Ethan Strange up to 5'8. Could you go, so you're talking about getting two CTWs, could you go Dom Young and Dylan Brown and move Strange? Are you playing Strange in the centres or at 5'8?
Yeah, I am, because I've got Lockie Galvin and Brown.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Could you move?
I could go Brown down, maybe. Yeah.
Well, not even Brown, like as in Brown, you could go to one of the, you could go Brown to
Guns and Wings,
Lomax and Dom Young to Manu. Just a thought, mate, because I did it this week and it worked out really well because I had to play Ethan Strange and he scored 90. So I know he's not going to do that every week, but like the 1 week I have to play him and he scores 90 for me, that's ridiculous. That's a large part of why I scored 11.48, I think. Like, that's just ridiculous. I spoke about on here, I was boosting this week, but the start of my week just went relatively well. Like, I think I, well, no, I'll lie about that, because I tossed up Hughes versus SJ, I tossed up Eli Katoa, and I tossed up Manu. They were kind of my big ones over the first two nights, and all three of the players that I didn't bring in scored 100, and so I was like, oh my God, but I knew that Dom Young was going to lose money and I wanted to trade him to Manu. So I actually reversed. I was bringing in Hammer as my boost. So I actually reversed that, got out of it, because SJ went well, Tommy Turbo went well, Ponga went well, and so I've, you know, looped his score, and I was looking like a good score, so I'm like, I'll save the boost for this week because I knew I wanted Manu and I want Angus Crichton. That's my kind of go this week. I think he looked fantastic. My only hesitation towards him is obviously the Roosters are going to have a pretty big injury ward on their hands. But, yeah, I just thought Angus looked really, really good, and he's at a great price. So my plans are Dom Young to Manu, locked and loaded. Like, Manu will play fullback this week. And I almost got him. I was going to get him this week. The rain scared me off. But reminder, James, never – like, rain didn't affect anyone. Like, they just – made it work. Like, Kalen scored 100, Manu scored 100. Like, the rain was fine. So I think anybody who tries to
convince me, 32. So that didn't work out too well for me. I saw Inari Tuala just in daylight, and I was like, God damn it, this is really killing me. So not my best option there. I should have leaned into Manu, because I spoke on it last week. I said, you know, he's probably the tier below, you know, Val. And I was just like, nah, tried to do Galaxy Brain and pick Bradman Best, but with Tedesco getting injured, if he's playing fullback, man, oh man, he goes big at fullback. You just got to have him this week. He's almost a captain option this week, I reckon, at fullback.
And he's, well,
even
he's going to,
even if guys missing.
I think he plays round 13 and 16 too, which is when Teddy's probably going to be on, you know, on Origin duty, more than likely. Either that or he's going to be out, you know, with whatever, if it's a concussion or whatever it is. So, yeah, I think he's locked and loaded for me. I think we're not saying anything too controversial. I reckon every Manly's dog's going to be getting Manu this week once he gets named at fullback on Tuesday. Angus Crichton, the other one for me. And then I've got a toss-up, either getting another gun, so potentially like trying to jump on a Storm player versus his depleted dogs, or, mate, James Schiller looked really good tonight, and he is bottom dollar, so he's the other one. Centre wing's becoming a bit hard because you've got James Schiller, then you've got the Kale Iro from the Sharks, who potentially, you know, he looked really good. Does he get, like, you've got a lot of cheapies in that area.
Another week for Iro, though, that's the thing, is you do have another week, so you can just see what happens this week after the bye. So Iro's not a definite.
No.
Depends if you need points. Like, you could probably go a week early and just, if you really need to play a centre wing and score a decent score, I wouldn't be against it. But you do have another week up your sleeve there. So Schiller, if he gets named. But again, the only thing that worry me about Gus Crichton or to Schiller is, like, you're dealing with Ricky Stewart and Trent Robinson, and they're notorious for, like, just dicking around with their team. And especially Angus Crichton, I just look at the Roosters and I just think, I just don't know if I can lean into second row there. If you hit the lottery, you'll hit it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a bit of a, It's a bit of a risky one, isn't it? But you got to risk it for the biscuit, as
Trent,
I say.
Well, and this is the thing, is that I think I missed out on Eli Katoa. I'm like, do I just try and get Gus and, you know, have that be? Because my second row at the moment is, I mean, nobody's second row is lighting it up, but I just, yeah, I need some more inspiration there. So do I get on and just sort of see how it goes? But, yeah, I've got plenty of cash to play with. I'm happy, mate. The one thing we can dine out on is SJ. How good did that turn out? Like, so our boy. Good. So, so happy with that. But, yeah, that's my plans at the moment. Manu, Gus Crichton, maybe Schiller. But, like, I think I'm going to have heaps of money. So I think I might try and look at, like, a Storm player of some sort versus the Dogs, potentially, or anybody who's playing the Titans next week.
The Raiders have the Titans on a Sunday afternoon. So
James Schiller. He's in.
Might be James Schiller there,
He's
mate.
In and I'm yeah. playing him, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But, yeah, that's my plans. All right, guys, that's a wrap. Nice. I'm actually pretty happy with that. An hour and 14 minutes with that injury list, mate. I think we've been pretty prompt. And we had some rants tonight too, a bit of tinfoil in there. Mate, you're coming down for the Bronx game on Friday. I'm still not sure whether I'm going to make it, unfortunately, but we'll see how we go because I am a Finns member, but it is a Bronx game. So obviously I buy a ticket, but yeah, I'll just have to see how I go with that one. But yeah, mate, enjoy the week, the lead in, and next Sunday will be good because we'll be talking about hopefully a good game and one of us getting the wood. Maybe you can get the wood over me there because I'm getting the wood over you in fantasy, mate.
In Supercoach. Yeah, 100%. Well, we'll call the Brisbane Brouhaha, not the Battle of Brisbane because the Battle of Brisbane can get in the bin. That needs a rebrand massively. But, yeah, it should be good. Hopefully we get you down there on Friday night, have a catch-up. Otherwise, we'll chat shop on Sunday next week as we usually do.
Sweet, mate. Sounds good. As always, guys, like the podcast, give it a review, recommend to a friend, like it on YouTube, whatever you listen to us on. If you want more info like this, patreon.com/NRLphysio and up the mighty, mighty Redcliffe Dolphins.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from.
That's about it, mate.